Državni ispitni center.
Maturità generale 2010.
Prova d'ascolto.
A tutti voi un cordiale saluto. Siamo all'inizio della prova d'ascolto d'inglese.
Questa prova d'esame si compone di due parti, la parte A e la parte B. Per ciascuna parte ascolterete un testo e risponderete poi ad un esercizio che a esso si ricollega. Dapprima leggerete l'esercizio, poi ascolterete ciascun testo per due volte. Potrete cominciare a risolvere l'esercizio già durante l'ascolto. L'inizio e la fine del testo saranno indicati dal seguente segnale acustico.
Scrivete le vostre risposte negli spazi appositamente previsti all'interno della prova, utilizzando la penna stilografica o la penna sfera. Scrivete in modo leggibile. In caso di errore, tracciate un segno sulla risposta scorretta e scrivete accanto ad essa quella corretta. Alle risposte e alle correzioni scritte in modo illeggibile verrà assegnato il punteggio di 0.
Dopo aver completato la risoluzione di ambedue le parti A e B della prova, avrete a disposizione ancora un minuto per compilare il foglio per le risposte per quanto riguarda l'esercizio A. Ricordatevi di indicare solamente una scelta per ciascuna affermazione dell'esercizio. In presenza di più scelte, infatti, alla vostra risposta verrà assegnato il punteggio di 0.
Abbiate fiducia in voi stessi e nelle vostre capacità. Vi auguriamo buon lavoro.
Ascoltate con attenzione. Aprite la prova d'esame.
Section A. You're going to hear a program about Cuban crocodiles. As you listen to the recording, tick the appropriate column below, then complete the answer sheet according to the instructions on it. You will hear the recording twice. Now read through the statements.
And that is why this Cuban crocodile is going on a hot date to Miami. Bill was one of the founding fathers of a species survival plan, a computer dating service that matches up potential breeding pairs from the 52 captive Cuban crocs across the USA. Then there's a sort of musical crocodiles when the animals are crated and shipped off across the country. But the plan doesn't stop there.
We're not satisfied just to breed animals in captivity. We want to try to preserve them in nature, because ultimately that's where these battles will be won or lost. It'll be in nature. It won't be in an exhibit or a cage somewhere.
Politically, Cuba and the USA have long thumbed their noses at each other. Yet on Cuba's Isle of Youth, there's rare international cooperation. It's helping overcome past differences, hands across the sea, and all for the sake of a crocodile. Ten years ago, no one knew whether the true Cuban crocodile still existed in this Lanier swamp. It had probably been wiped out. So to redress the balance, the Cuban government, with help from crocodile experts from the USA, hatched a plan to help them recolonize their old habitat.
Well, I think initially people were very skeptical that we'd be able to cultivate a relationship with Cuba and a conservation program. I came in here, I guess, somewhat as a blind man. I'd studied so much about crocodilians that I hadn't given a lot of reading or research into the island itself in terms of politics or things like that. So I guess I was quite favorably surprised. Cayo Petrero was the reintroduction center for Cuban crocodiles. Animals were brought from another facility and set up essentially in pens that were just the swamp inside the pens. Animals were bred here, and then the gates were opened on two or three different occasions, and the animals were allowed to disperse at a natural rate, and the animals weren't just young. They were of various ages, sexes, and size classes, and a total of about 600 animals were reintroduced.
Expeditions into the swamp are not without difficulty. At least there are no venomous snakes to worry about. But the problems of getting from A to B are obvious. For all the world's crocodile species, when it comes to procreation, a bout of fisticuffs is often the order of the day. The winner then gets to spread his genes about. After mating, the female sets off to find a shady spot beside the river or swamp to make their nest. They'll lay anything from 30 to 90 eggs, each with a tough, leathery shell that resists water loss.
The sex of the babies is determined in incubation. A crocodilian egg, when it is laid, it doesn't have a gender, but by incubation temperatures, that produces males and females. Females are usually at the high and the low end of the temperature range, and it requires optimal temperatures in order to get the males.
After 3 months incubation, the eggs hatch and out pops a baby croc.
Now you will hear the recording again.
And that is why this Cuban crocodile is going on a hot date to Miami. Bill was one of the founding fathers of a species survival plan, a computer dating service that matches up potential breeding pairs from the 52 captive Cuban crocs across the USA. Then there's a sort of musical crocodiles when the animals are crated and shipped off across the country. But the plan doesn't stop there.
We're not satisfied just to breed animals in captivity. We want to try to preserve them in nature, because ultimately that's where these battles will be won or lost. It'll be in nature. It won't be in an exhibit or a cage somewhere.
Politically, Cuba and the USA have long thumbed their noses at each other. Yet on Cuba's Isle of Youth, there's rare international cooperation. It's helping overcome past differences, hands across the sea, and all for the sake of a crocodile. Ten years ago, no one knew whether the true Cuban crocodile still existed in this Lanier swamp. It had probably been wiped out. So to redress the balance, the Cuban government, with help from crocodile experts from the USA, hatched a plan to help them recolonize their old habitat.
Well, I think initially people were very skeptical that we'd be able to cultivate a relationship with Cuba and a conservation program. I came in here, I guess, somewhat as a blind man. I'd studied so much about crocodilians that I hadn't given a lot of reading or research into the island itself in terms of politics or things like that. So I guess I was quite favorably surprised. Cayo Petrero was the reintroduction center for Cuban crocodiles. Animals were brought from another facility and set up essentially in pens that were just the swamp inside the pens. Animals were bred here, and then the gates were opened on two or three different occasions, and the animals were allowed to disperse at a natural rate, and the animals weren't just young. They were of various ages, sexes, and size classes, and a total of about 600 animals were reintroduced.
Expeditions into the swamp are not without difficulty. At least there are no venomous snakes to worry about. But the problems of getting from A to B are obvious. For all the world's crocodile species, when it comes to procreation, a bout of fisticuffs is often the order of the day. The winner then gets to spread his genes about. After mating, the female sets off to find a shady spot beside the river or swamp to make their nest. They'll lay anything from 30 to 90 eggs, each with a tough, leathery shell that resists water loss.
The sex of the babies is determined in incubation. A crocodilian egg, when it is laid, it doesn't have a gender, but by incubation temperatures, that produces males and females. Females are usually at the high and the low end of the temperature range, and it requires optimal temperatures in order to get the males.
After 3 months incubation, the eggs hatch and out pops a baby croc.
This is the end of Section A. Section B. You're going to hear an interview with Bob Ballard. As you listen to the recording, write your answers in note form in the spaces below. Use 1 to 5 words for each answer. You will hear the recording twice. Now read through the questions.
These days, Ballard and his team are exploring the depths of the Black Sea, where they found a 1,500-year-old shipwreck almost perfectly preserved. He calls the oceans our planet's biggest wilderness, and by his estimate, they contain as many as 1 million ancient shipwrecks. He's discovered 9 of them so far. Bob Ballard joins us here in our studio in Washington, D.C. Bob, great to see you.
Great to be here.
Now, I'm just so curious, how did a landlocked boy from Wichita, Kansas, end up being one of today's greatest deep-sea explorers? How does that happen?
Well, I fell in love with Captain Nemo and the book 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, and I wanted to be Captain Nemo. And shortly after being born in Kansas, we moved to San Diego, and it was really living on the shores of San Diego as a little kid from Kansas that I fell in love with the ocean, fell in love with exploration. And fortunately, right there was the largest oceanographic institute on Earth, Scripps in La Jolla. And just down from there was the U.S. submarine base. So it's really no surprise that I went on to become an oceanographer and a naval officer. And it's because of where I grew up.
And you just recently came back from the sea. You just came back from an expedition. Tell me about that, and what are you putting all your energies into these days?
Well, I always have two passions beneath the sea, the natural history beneath the sea. I mean, my background is in oceanography, and if anything, I'm an earth scientist, and 72% of the Earth's underwater, so naturally we got to go down there. But I also fell in love with human history beneath the sea, and that came late in my career, following our discovery of the Titanic, which was sort of the first pyramid of the deep to be discovered. And after finding the Titanic, we went on to find the Bismarck and the Yorktown, and all of a sudden I realized that the deep sea is the largest museum on Earth, yet no one is exploring it. So fortunately, then, thanks to National Geographic, every summer I head off to the big museum. And one of the biggest wings of that museum is the Black Sea. It's a magical place that's been off bounds to us during the Cold War. But the Black Sea is the most unique body of water on our planet. And because it has no oxygen in its deep waters, it preserves ancient history.
Now you will hear the recording again.
These days, Ballard and his team are exploring the depths of the Black Sea, where they found a 1,500-year-old shipwreck almost perfectly preserved. He calls the oceans our planet's biggest wilderness, and by his estimate, they contain as many as 1 million ancient shipwrecks. He's discovered 9 of them so far. Bob Ballard joins us here in our studio in Washington, D.C. Bob, great to see you.
Great to be here.
Now, I'm just so curious. How did a landlocked boy from Wichita, Kansas, end up being one of today's greatest deep-sea explorers? How does that happen?
Well, I fell in love with Captain Nemo and the book 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, and I wanted to be Captain Nemo. And shortly after being born in Kansas, we moved to San Diego. And it was really living on the shores of San Diego as a little kid from Kansas that I fell in love with the ocean, fell in love with exploration. And fortunately, right there was the largest oceanographic institute on Earth, Scripps in La Jolla. And just down from there was the U.S. submarine base. So it's really no surprise that I went on to become an oceanographer and a naval officer. And it's because of where I grew up.
And you just recently came back from the sea. You just came back from an expedition. Tell me about that, and what are you putting all your energies into these days?
Well, I always have two passions beneath the sea, the natural history beneath the sea. I mean, my background is in oceanography, and if anything, I'm an earth scientist, and 72% of the Earth's underwater, so naturally we got to go down there. But I also fell in love with human history beneath the sea, and that came late in my career following our discovery of the Titanic, which was sort of the first pyramid of the deep to be discovered. And after finding the Titanic, we went on to find the Bismarck and the Yorktown. And all of a sudden, I realized that the deep sea is the largest museum on Earth, yet no one is exploring it. So fortunately, and thanks to National Geographic, every summer I head off to the big museum. And one of the biggest wings of that museum is the Black Sea. It's a magical place that's been off bounds to us during the Cold War. But the Black Sea is the most unique body of water on our planet. And because it has no oxygen in its deep waters, it preserves ancient history.
This is the end of Section B.
Ora avete a disposizione un minuto per compilare il foglio per le risposte per quanto riguarda l'esercizio A.
Siamo alla conclusione della prova d'ascolto d'inglese. Smettete di scrivere, chiudete la prova d'esame e posatela sull'orlo del banco insieme al foglio per le risposte.
Ancora un cordiale saluto.